Hello and welcome to Black Gold, a five-part series that digs deep through the 3CR archive to present Black Gold. My name's Kerry Lee Harding and I'm the producer of the series. Each episode was created right here in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on Wurundjeri land in Fitzroy, Melbourne, together with assistant producer Corey Green. Throughout the Black Gold series, we'll take you from the 1970s through to the present day, with a look at how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander broadcasters at 3CR covered some incredible community events and significant political struggles. We'll attend a land rights meeting in 1978, celebrate the life of broadcaster Lisa Belair, and hear about the success of the campaign to save Northland Secondary College. We'll also reflect back on the anti-bicentenary actions in 1988 and get up to date with the ongoing struggle for sovereignty and treaty. Just a warning to all our listeners, you will hear voices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have passed. And now, episode 3 of the Black Gold series, the fight to save Northland Secondary College, with broadcaster, performing artist and community advocate Kutcher Edwards presenting.
This is a story you might not have heard before. It's a good story. And it's an important story because it's about a small community coming together and fighting for education, culture and pride. And winning. In late 1992, the newly formed Kennett government shut down 55 public schools. But Northland Secondary College didn't accept the decision. For the next 2.5 years, staff, students and the community got together and ran the school independently of government, while fighting the closure all the way to the Supreme Court. What was it like to in a sense, beat Kennett?
I'll tell you, it was the best in the world. Yeah. Not only beating Kennett, who could say black and white and Aboriginal, but especially us Aboriginals, to beat the government.
Okay.
I mean, that was a powerful A. And like I said, the kids done it.
That was Deirdre Bucks, who was a Koori educator at the school and the linchpin of the campaign. I spoke to her and former student Alistair Thorpe about their memories. Alistair's mum, Lynn Thorpe, was also a Koori educator at the school. Rafaela Gelati Brown was the principal of the school.
So what transpired? How did it come about that the school closed? What actually happened?
Well, the government was, like Al said, was closed.
So over the summer period, he decided to...
Well, I think the school was still...
We didn't hear about that, eh?
No. But it was it at the end of the year or was it during?
It was in October.
Yeah.
Because I was on a perp at the time.
Yeah.
So what actually happened? What
apparently one afternoon, they rang Refala.
Yeah.
If you heard anything, didn't hear anything, you were sweet. But that night at home, Refala got a phone call to say there's a meeting. And that's when they approached it and said we were going to be closed, but it came at the last minute, Northlands was.
Okay.
It was the last minute.
Wasn't there a list?
Yeah.
There was a list of schools that
And Northland wasn't on it, you're right.
That they were to close?
Yeah.
No, said it wasn't. On that list, it didn't have Northlands.
Yeah, but that was what, they identified a number of schools.
Yeah.
And then they must have made a decision that Northlands could be added to that.
That night, yeah.
And what was your understanding of the reasons behind?
Well, my first thing as an Aboriginal, because we had too many Aboriginal and we educate them. During our period of time, Lynn and I was there, we seen, I forget now.
So how many Aboriginal students would you say were going to the school?
I reckon it was 77 when at the time the school closed.
And we're looking at 100 in the following year because of the new...
And it was the most in the metropolitan
in the district.
Area.
In Victoria.
Really? So, attending secondary school.
Yes, and getting
the best results.
Going past into year 12. Okay. We got a big turnaround. We used to have 7 or 8 each year.
Yeah.
And that was another big one for Victoria too.
Yeah, so we're getting the most VCE students through.
Okay.
And
what was your responsibility at the school, Deirdre? What did you see your purposes being?
Helping the children and
realm.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? If they had any problems
like reading and writing, you go in and try to help them without the other kids knowing you walk in and support them.
Okay.
Help them do their work and home visits with the parents, you know, to see where things going on with both of them.
Mm.
I'm trying to go back to them days. And
Run
culture classes, have a sort of a lunch and sort of program that we make sure they got lunch, make sure they got tutors. If they have a problem mucking up their class, you'd go in and help settle them.
Mm.
Help me out a whole bit of everything.
What did you see Auntie Deirdre's and your mum's role as being? Why was it necessary?
Well, I think it was that link to community as well, and to be support us in the school environment and make us feel like we're part of the school.
Why Aboriginal so different than the normal?
Well, you look at the history of any, you know, we were getting a Koori class, you know, that wasn't happening in other schools.
We had our own Koori room.
And we were doing drama, we were doing a lot of dancing, traditional dance. So that stuff was happening that wasn't happening in other schools.
And that was a push from us, the same thing.
And that was really the cultural, you know, education we were getting as well.
Mm.
You're not going to get that in a normal public school. About our identity and our background and the history of this country of being discriminated against.
Mm.
So, you know, plus it's the Western system too, you know.
Education you're talking about.
Yeah, education in general is a Westernised system. We've got having that support there just helps us help our mob here just engage in school better and understanding our issues. Or, what was going on with... Because, you know, there was different things happening with Koori kids.
Mm.
It wasn't happening. And some... But in saying that, there was a lot of white kids,
who would come into your class. Oh, yeah.
Well, they felt better.
Yeah.
You know, Deirdre and Mum looked after a lot of other kids too.
We worked with them a lot too because their parents... Because being there for so long, we helped their parents and worked with all kids, as you know.
Because you know all the non-Indigenous kids and parents. And it was more communal rather than
And it was because we had more, in their eyes, understanding.
Yeah.
And we talked, we didn't just...
Wasn't just a number.
...gun the kids down.
In addition to having excellent Koori education, Northland Secondary College offered a number of subjects that weren't available at any other schools in the area, particularly in creative arts. They provided special programs for students with disabilities, for young mums and homeless youth.
So as an adult and a Koori educator at the school, you as an educated Aboriginal in them days, you understood the motivation. Al, as a year seven, did you understand the politics of...
Well, we learned a lot. I think being kids, being that age, there's a few of us, you know, that lasted the distance. I think we learned so much just going through that 2 or 3 years of campaigning and learning about the political system and about decisions, how decisions get made, you know, and understanding that more about real life, real world stuff.
Yeah,
but I think that was a bigger.
But as the grandson of Auntie Elma Thorpe, you would have lived, and so heard Auntie Elma talk about, and your dad, and your Uncle Robbie and Auntie, all your uncles and aunties talking this political.
Well,
as a year seven student, did you understand it all?
Yeah, definitely. And because of that background, you know, we had that history of knowing, you know, even how bars were set up, how the gym was set up, you know, different orgs, how they had to fight to get funding.
Mm.
Yeah. It was sort of like a similar
thing
with the school. It was another fight that we had to come up.
That was one for us, not yourself.
But it was like, I suppose I heard all those stories, but then this is my turn to live it.
As a
young
fella,
you know.
Yeah.
And getting to see even what Uncle Rob and Foley and Dad and Mum and Deirdre and, you know, Jill, Rafaela even. Just
everyone
the things they had to do to, you know, to keep that government campaign going.
And you see how the government lies, and, you know, I mean...
Yeah. And the tricks they try...
Tricks they done.
How they try and bribe you, you know.
So once the school... The closure happened, what was... What transpired? What actually happened? Can you remember?
Everybody just got so upset. I remember that very well.
It was a roller coaster. Very
well. Yeah, because we had the last school play.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So you had a play at the school?
Yes.
Or in the hall?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what happened?
Well, afterwards, that last performance, I remember this. I think we got a footy somewhere too. Everyone just broke down and was so upset because, like, well, a lot of them kids, like I say, couriers and non-couriers, that was their home. I mean, on their days off, I had to hang their couch.
Yeah.
I used to hunt them. Yeah,
so what happened? The barricades went up?
Down bad.
What happened? What went on?
Everyone just cried.
Wasn't there a few meetings after that?
Yeah, when the meetings started then.
So there was meetings that used to happen at the school.
Mm.
Yeah, what were going to do?
Yeah. So I remember going into the staff room
for
big meetings with the parents and a few of the students. And
so what happened with the actual closures and Kennett's head honchos coming in? And did Barrett...
We ended up having
barricades or
what
stuff
happened? No, when we had thing, the first year, my father gave me the keys. Like I said, I won't take the keys if anyone else in the school had them.
Okay.
Because, well, you know what it's like, and being an Aboriginal.
Yeah.
Or anything goes missing, I blame us.
Okay.
So, me only having the keys, put it on money to blame. But at the time, it was me, Bill Maxwell. The old principal.
Okay.
He came in to help, and he was there with us at the beginning.
Yeah.
He had the keys personally, that's all he had at that time.
Yeah.
And then we was running the school, we put in for volunteers. We got quite a high number of volunteers.
Yeah.
At that time, we had quite a high number of curried up students.
How many did we start with the next year in 93?
There was quite a few at the time, and then we slowly thinned out.
Yeah.
And during a period of time, at Dumping, they kept on trying to harass us, and often Bill Maxwell and myself.
Who were they?
The government.
Okay.
And they tried to get Bill Maxwell to sign, if anything goes wrong, he's eligible. Bill said no, because he's been sick and a lot of problems. He said he's going. And am I going? I should go. I said, no, I'm staying. And I signed. I signed to say anything missing, I'll take responsibility.
Okay.
But I wanted the keys with nobody to
help. So what was that? What was the document to say that you would be liable for anything?
In the school, I wanted education department.
Okay.
The property, because, you know, they think courage all the time, you know. So I done that, and as I was put in for a ad, and we got quite a few teachers, and then we had it up and down at the school.
Yeah.
And we run it there for a year, it was pretty good. I locked all the school, only had the one door open.
Yeah.
So I knew who was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And out, I sat in the staff room with them.
Yeah.
And then at the following end of a year, I'll go to that story and come back if you want. But that's when they locked us out the following year.
Yeah, that's right.
We went there, tell me now. And well, they had security guard there, remember first.
Yeah, that's right, they had started getting security.
Now you can tell them when you use the toilet sort of taps.
Yeah.
So what, were they, how did, like, electricity and for utilities, how was that all paid for?
Well, the Curry Education Department, Curry of it, we had our own funding, we had our own stuff.
Okay.
So I only used our stuff, which we owned.
Yeah.
So we used it all there at school.
Yeah.
We, the boys, done a bit of dance and fundraising, all sorts of things to get money.
You danced the whole time.
Yeah, the whole time in their spares.
Mm.
They had dance and they made a few dollars for us to keep it, going. Yeah. I mean, they done a very, very big job for us, the boys, apart from, you know, school.
One of the ways that the community could contribute to the campaign was through fundraising efforts. Here's a community service announcement that was played on 3CR in 1995.
Thursday, 26th of January 1995 is Invasion Day. And on Invasion Day this year, we're going to have a benefit picnic for Northland Secondary College in the Edinburgh Gardens, featuring Joe Geyer, Chris Wilson and Shane O'Mara, Black Magic, Tommy Lewis, Three Gabbars and Me, Dave Arden and All Together, and the Northland Secondary College Spears Dancers. That's in the Edinburgh Gardens, St George's Road, North Fitzroy. No alcohol, and it's a catered event from 1 p.m. till dark.
Organised by Gary Foley and the Save Northland Secondary College campaign.
So in understanding that this was against the wishes of the state government, you've kept the school open, but yeah. Every school or every student goes to school knowing that they're going to graduate the next year. So, in reality, did you know that possibly that it wasn't being...
Well, we regarded it as our real school. Yeah. We treated it as... Like, it wasn't any different.
Yeah.
We had class.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying is that...
Well, it wasn't recognised.
Wasn't recognised by the State Department.
Well, we did, though. So, for us...
Education was education, whether it was... Yeah.
So every year, it was sort of like we didn't know what was going to happen next year.
But we had proper classes.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm trying to allude to. How was it being certified if it wasn't at a...
Well, it wasn't probably... It wasn't recognised officially. I think I had some... Because I stayed there the whole time. I never went anywhere.
Yeah.
So I had year 8 and year 9 pretty much...
Year 10.
On the street.
Yeah.
So, well, year 10, I think it was, we came back.
We went back, yeah.
So, I had to get permission, I think, to go into year 10 because I've been...
Yeah.
So, they had to... I don't know if I did an assessment. Did they do one or not?
They done sort of a bit of one. But, like, we had no qualms. We run a normal education to their standard with the teachers.
So, who ticked off everything?
Me.
So you were practically the principal.
Yeah. By then it was definitely.
Yeah, it's only fellow one that even there. Right.
So what I remember something about a pavilion.
The second year when they locked us out of school on the first day of school in 94. We had it in the school for a while and they had a security there in the hall.
Mm.
When any of us, they held the school locked. If we wasn't to use the toilet, they wouldn't let us go in the hall and use the toilet.
Oh, my God.
And they took the taps off the...
Yeah, they pretty much tried...
The heads off the taps.
Outside the school, so we had nothing.
Yeah, they try to... They try to smoke us out.
Yeah.
So we had enough by then.
Classic war tactics.
So then we went to Bundoora a few times, because we knew there was toilets there in a shelter. Yeah.
Bundoora, what do you mean?
Bundoora
Park.
Okay, so he's... You just had a school
for a month? We still had classes there every day. We never missed no classes.
We still had
classes.
Teachers that were committed.
Teachers. I used to drive...
But what about weather? What would happen if...
We had the pavilion area.
Okay.
And I used to drive the bus to pick everyone up. And
so we had the bus pick us all up. And then we went to Northcote.
Then we went to Rosmond Street.
Rosmond Street.
The church down in the hall until they started renovating it. Then
they allowed us to move into there.
So Menindjaku.
Yeah.
What is Menindjaku now?
What is Menindjaku now? Yeah.
Okay.
When they first got that place, we stayed there. When they started renovations, we moved to the pavilion.
Yeah. Which is at the back of Norfolk Pools.
That footy ground there.
McDonald's footy.
And that was that the last place we went to?
Yeah.
Because by then, while all this is happening, we had a court case.
Yeah, we've been in court.
So we've gone to the court cases throughout
these
2 years.
Whilst you were going to school.
Yeah, that was their social studies.
So whenever there was...
Okay.
Whenever there was anything to do with court, we'd all go in and we'd all be part of that.
Sit in there and listen to the fights.
Yeah. See how they lie and see what they say.
Or we'd go to camp, we'd go to rallies if we had rallies. And
Two students, Muthama Sinapan and Bruce Foley, were the plaintiffs for the ongoing court battles. Bruce's father, Gary Foley, was the president of the school council and a broadcaster at 3CR. This is him talking on 3CR in 1995, near to the end of the legal battle.
I'd like to reiterate for you the latest on the battle to reopen Northland Secondary College. The situation at the moment is that the Northland Secondary College mob are waiting yet again for a bunch of judges to hand down a decision. The decision we're waiting on is the result of an appeal by the government resorting to obscure esoteric legal technicalities, folks. The government has appealed on technical points of law against the Equal Opportunity Board's order to reopen Northland Secondary College. If the government were to win this round of the protracted legal battle, the Northland Secondary College people will be immediately appealing to the High Court of Australia, the final say legally in within this great land of ours, where we could be expected to win spectacularly. But all of what's going on at the moment, and if we're forced to go to the High Court of Australia to win there, all of this is completely superfluous, given that, ultimately the Kennett government should have a long time ago simply admitted the mistake that they made and has been found to have made by three separate independent tribunals so far, including the full bench of the Supreme Court of Victoria. They should admit that they made a mistake and simply reopen the school. It would have saved them at least $500,000 had they have done so some time ago, but the Kennett government, whilst on one hand pretending or masquerading as the defenders of the taxpayers of Victoria and sort of, being greatly concerned about the expenditure of taxpayers' money, seems to have no such concern when it comes to handing out money by the armoured truckload to the Melbourne legal profession in order to continue fighting the unwinnable legal fight that they're involved in now. The simple fact of the matter is that ultimately the Northland Secondary College people will win.
The legal battle was accompanied by sustained political action. Here's a community service announcement from 1995, calling people to rally outside the court in support of Northland Secondary College.
Enough is enough. Reopen Northland Secondary College. Northland Secondary College offered the only supportive and self-determined education environment for Victoria's Koori community. The Kennett government must be made to abide by the Equal Opportunity Board's order to reopen Northland this year. On Monday the 30th of January, the Kennett government will once again appeal against the EO Board's decision. Show your support for Northland College. Rally outside the Supreme Court at 210 William Street, City on Monday the 30th of January between 4 and 6 p.m. Enough is enough.
So by the end of that 2 years, that's when we actually found out that we've got school back.
Yeah.
So what transpired there? How did that come about? What was the actual argument?
Well, actually, before that, didn't they open it and then they close it again?
Oh, yeah, they
So after 1 year, they said they were going to open it again, reopen.
Then they appealed.
Then they appealed and...
The state government appealed the decision.
Yeah.
They had
four
times.
Yeah. So we won the case, right?
Yeah. On the grounds of what?
Well, discrimination against... Because of how many Koori kids were going to that school. Yeah. It was discrimination against the Koori kids of the community. Right. Of that area, region.
So racism.
Because there was no other schools that were appropriate. We had kids that went to other schools and they got problems as soon as they went to those schools.
And now we've been in and out of court and we sort of did win by the appeal. And it went on appealing and winning quite a few times, not just once.
Because at the same time, and I don't know if this is the same argument, code schools opened up across the state. What is your understanding of what was happening then?
What happened there, Lynn and I got a phone call from let's ask Lynn, actually the person who rang, and ask can they see us and talk about a community school. And there was this funding about for five in Victoria.
Five code schools to
Well, at this moment, it wasn't four codes.
Yeah.
And we said, look.
The concept, it was just.
The concept. And because I'll take a step back from the thing, our parents, where we had to go around to and all this court staff, Lynn and I, house to house, to every Aboriginal person, and to say, do they want a Koori school? Because they offered us a Koori school. And 95% said no. Everyone's going to be a mixed culture. It's best to learn your kids to mix in the culture now. Mm. We don't want a Koori school at Henry.
Okay.
So we've done all that. Remember them that and thing. And then in the meantime, all this happening, we heard them same people who approached us about this five schools with the VAI.
VAI stands for Victorian Aboriginal Education Association Incorporated.
And I knew then, I think, then they tried to get in the other school closed where TAFE is. What do you call it? Formerly High.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly High. They closed that too. That's at the back of TAFE.
Mm.
And they tried to get them to do, going to do a code school there. That's when they are going to come up with the code.
Mm.
And
so the reality was that they closed Northlands down.
Mm.
This is me just thinking out loud. They closed Northlands because of the high attendance of the Indigenous students within the district.
That's my thing about it.
Yeah, and yet they were willing to support the opening of five Aboriginal schools, Aboriginal-only schools in Victoria.
Yeah.
This is the state government, the Kennett government.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yep.
Okay.
That was
I think there was a criteria for why these schools were closed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we, for us, it felt like it was against our
Northlands.
School because it was all we had.
All Aboriginal.
But
all
I think they had a set Aboriginal. Of criteria for why they wanted to close these schools. But
yeah.
I think it was a bit narrow-minded when they weren't looking at the broader impact of maybe what the school was.
Mm.
Because the outcomes for our kids was bigger than anywhere else.
Because right up until that, could you, VAI and everybody else, all Aboriginal educations and Aboriginal education wise in Victoria, use Lynn and I as example, because what we were doing there was so much, what unis weren't doing, what coming in our own culture wise, you know, and the control we sort of had there, and the what do you call it, where they'd allow you, and the teachers got involved, and.
Yeah.
See, what we was doing, educate the teachers.
Yeah.
We'd get the teachers on board, and that's how, like I said, the big part of the thing, like I said, he said performance.
Yeah.
And running little skid shows to show, And that was the big thing, because we got more and more teachers,
music,
as you know.
Music was big as
well. On board, and the cultural awareness, we always got people into the cultural awareness with
You
know, and I think, because it was running so smooth, that's what shocked us all, because everybody used us as a tool.
So, when the word came through, so who were the actual claimants of this? So it was Foley, Gary Foley, Muthama Sinapan.
Only two in the
Bruce,
year, that's all we needed.
Bruce was.
Bruce Foley and
Bruce Foley,
and
they were the claimants of this action.
On behalf of the community, it was that. Yeah.
They were the representatives,
So what transpired? What actually transpired for you to win the case? Can you remember?
It was a lot of hard work and a lot of things, because there was so much. I mean, there's a lot of underhand, dirty work. Someone broke, while the school was closed, when they moved us, someone broke into our career room and stuffed all our files. And then
somebody broke in and all your information.
Yeah, private information files, which is the education department's once you write it.
Okay.
That's why I tell anyone never write personal files anymore.
Okay.
And they got in and it all came in court, remember, about Bruce and what's his name? Amos, and it all came up in court.
That what?
They used all that.
They
knowledge.
Used it as knowledge.
To
like when
try
making
the case.
Bruce first came to us. You got
That they were not very
Or was
problems.
Yeah.
No, problem children.
But,
okay.
But they didn't personal. Show the, yeah. But okay. They didn't show where we worked with them and they changed. They didn't show the
okay.
outcome of it. They only showed the...
The start of their, their troublesome ways.
And they never showed the outcome of it, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. The first, they saw the first domino fall and not...
The outcome.
You know, the outcome.
Yeah.
So what happened? You won the case, and so what transpired after that?
Well, the media...
The media drove us mad.
Yeah.
The same media who probably didn't want to know anything about the reasons why they were closing the school.
And
typical.
Like I said, we had a lot of problems there. Like
we had to start again, really, after that.
Remember, it was closed for 3.5 years or something. And we had to get everything completely new because the whole educational system changed.
Okay. So... Was the case won while Kennett was still in power?
No, it was.
Do you
remember?
Yeah, okay. It went to High Court and they threw it out of court.
Okay.
Yeah, and they went to High Court.
Because the state government took it back to
court? Yeah, they kept on taking it back.
What was it like to in a sense, beat Kennett?
I'll tell you.
And his...
Barlett was the best in the world.
Yeah.
Not only beating Kennett, who could say... Black and white, Aboriginal, but especially us Aboriginals, to beat the government.
Okay.
I mean, that was a powerful A. And like I said, the kids done it.
Yeah.
That was Deirdre Bucks and Alistair Thorpe talking about the fight to save Northland Secondary College.
You're listening to an episode of the five-part series Black Gold. Produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Black Gold uncovers and celebrates the rich Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander contributions to radio across four decades.
The fight to save Northland Secondary College went from 1992 to early 1995. Afterwards, there was a well-deserved victory celebration. We start with the principal, Raffaella Gelati Brown.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Well, we're here, right? And we're alive and running so well. Look, it is with great joy and with great pride that I welcome you here today to this wonderful celebration. It's a great opportunity for us and from the School Council to thank you all for the tremendous effort that there has been over the past 2 years on the part of quite a number of people. When I last stood in this hall, or one of the biggest times that I remember is when we had 600 people here 2 years ago. And at that time there was a stomping off the feet that went on for nearly 10 minutes as people vowed that we would get back into the school and reopen the school, and we achieved it. So to all of you, thank you. Many other individuals, many, many individuals and organisations gave us support over the past 2 years. I'm talking about even the little people who ring us up and say, go on, keep fighting, or letters we get from Queensland or WA. So every single person, it could not have been one if it hadn't really captured the imagination of all the people. And at the end, whilst we might have won, there would have been no real victory if in the final analysis we didn't have two things. First, the students and parents willing to stick by the school. We had to get them to sign paper after paper after paper to the Equal Opportunity Board, to the Supreme Court, saying that they were committed to the school and that they would come back, and they came back. So without you, we wouldn't have had a school. And secondly, the preparedness of the teachers, the staff, and the educators and everybody to also place their careers at risk over 2 years, repeatedly acknowledge that they were for Northland and coming to Northland, and actually at the end coming here to do the hard work and work miracles in getting the school up and running. and ready to start in 2 days. They have worked miracles and I really salute them. Thank you.
And speaking of people who refuse to be intimidated and would not be beaten down by the Kennett government, I have great pleasure in introducing Wilfred Sinapan, who is going to say a few words. But she didn't know at the time because she's been shy.
Firstly, I'd like to thank everybody for turning up today and celebrating with us. With us, even though the weather hasn't been all the best, I'd like to go on to say thank you for all the support given from the different people, teachers, different crew organisations over the last 2 years, and that it's been a long, hard struggle, and it's all been worthwhile because we've got the school back. I'd also just like to say that united we can overcome any obstacle, and just thank you.
I told you she couldn't be intimidated. And speaking of people who couldn't be intimidated, I'm now also very pleased to introduce the president of our school council, Mr. Gary Foley, who is our final words.
Thank you, John. Well, folks, the last time I stood here like this, I think it was in this room, I can remember saying something along the lines of El pueblo unido a mafra vencido. The people united will never be defeated. And I was right. Even though I said that, at various stages I wasn't sure whether we'd ever see this day, so that I could stand here and look out at all you people, a lot of whom, many of whom were here that night, most of whom have been with us throughout the struggle over the last 2 years. The important lesson that I hope that everybody in this room and all the kids who go to Northlands have learned is that ordinary people can change history. Ordinary people can make history. The Northlands people, the Northlands community, Koori's and non-Koori's, adults and kids. We made history, folks. We made history that future generations of Northland students and students all over this state and all over Australia are going to read about. And if you think about it, at the end of the day, I slightly disagree with some of the previous speakers about lawyers and politicians being of great assistance to this, but that's all right. The important thing that I want to say on that is that in my mind, the real heroes of the last 2 years of the struggle of the Northland people were you people there who I'm looking at now. The ordinary people in this community who believed, the ordinary people in this community who supported and stood by the rebel school for the really difficult days. And head and shoulders, and I don't care what anyone says, head and shoulders above anyone else as one of the bona fides heroes of the people in this whole struggle has to have been Deirdre Bucks, the Aboriginal educator of this school. And never let it be said otherwise, ladies. And I think it's important, Deirdre once said to me at some point through all this battle, that she was inspired by a lot of people she's seen around her. And I must say that I was inspired, as were many others, by the sacrifices made by the likes of Deirdre, especially by the struggle and the perseverance of the kids who attended that mobile rebel school in a cricket ground dressing shed for most of the time at the back of the Northcote swimming pool. It's important that all you people here always remember those who fought so hard in this battle, but equally important, never forget that it was you who made this possible. Remember 2 years ago, whatever it was, when we were in this hall and we all streamed out of here determined to fight. We all believed that night we could never lose. And look what happened, folks. It really is a matter of people being able to change history if they so choose. History is not something that is obscure and over there and taught you in history books. History is something that lives in this room, and history is something that all of us, every single person in this room, has the ability to make and change. Thank you. That's all I want to say. And I'd like to invite your father back up to the final bit of the ceremony.
I'd like to call on Bruce and Wukama and Deirdre Bucks to come up to the front to draw the curtains on the plaque to remember today. A big cheer for Deirdre. Deirdre, do you want to go through this? I'd like to thank everybody for coming today and supporting our school over the last 2 years of battle. And I'd like a special thanks to the kids who stuck by me and the rebel teachers and everyone who helped with their donations and kept us alive. That's all I've got to say.
That was a selection of victory speeches given at the school after the epic battle to save Northland Secondary College. Next up, we'll hear from Gary Foley, who, as well as being president of the school council, was a broadcaster at 3CR. Here he is talking to Bill Hartley.
And Gary Foley is as delighted as anybody, and he's on the line. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Bill.
One would say good one.
Yes, it's one of the better mornings in the last couple of years for us.
Yeah, that's right. It's disgraceful what the state government did, though, and the critical element is the loss of 2 years' important education.
Yeah, and in some instances that loss has probably been too much for some of the older kids, which is part of the ongoing problem that we now face.
Yeah, they've been lost out of the system.
This is right, and there's some of us who are trying to set up some sort of programs to sort of sustain them for the next couple of years, because there's a range of possibilities for some of them kids. I mean, whilst they seem to have lost so much, I think people should also remember that the actual experience of having gone through the political struggle that these kids have gone through in the last 2 years and to have achieved the result that they have has probably much, much more than compensated for their lack of education, because in many ways they have been educated and probably in a far more appropriate way for them to fit in into society and survive.
Well, North,
and it's done a fantastic change in some of the personalities of these kids. I mean, you know, it's a great builder of self-esteem and, you know, pride for these kids to be walking around today in the streets of the northern suburbs, because everybody's pulling them up and saying congratulations to them, and they feel 10 feet tall, and that's got to be good for everybody out here.
And if the kids can give the time and their family resources to it, Northland is now well and truly a school for the future, and no doubt it can arrange its resources for some remedial catch-up for the lost time.
Absolutely, and I also expect that given that we've had probably the best publicity of probably any school in Victoria in the last few weeks, or especially yesterday and today, and I'd expect that we'd probably get many more students than was anticipated, because there's a lot of kids who now want to come to Northlands from all over the place.
Now, Phil Good, as acting premier, did say yesterday, and he suggested on ABC television that he discussed the matter with the premier before he went away, that in the event of an adverse decision, that the state government wouldn't go any further. You're pretty comfortable that that will be the case.
Well, the only sad thing about yesterday was that I would have much preferred to see the face of Geoffrey Kennett conceding defeat than Phil Good, you know. And they have conceded defeat. There is no possible avenue now for them to go to, and it's my strong suspicion that they made the decision not to go to the High Court because for the simple reason they knew they didn't have a leg to stand on, and they wouldn't get very far at all. They probably wouldn't have got a leg to appear.
They've been there before on this issue, haven't they, and got a pretty fair indication then, although it was a slightly different point of law.
Yeah, that's right. But nevertheless, they've now, I mean, even the old Herald Sun this morning is saying that, you know, this is one of, well, they describe it as one of the few defeats suffered by the Kennett government since it came to power in October 1992. I would suggest that this is the most significant, by far, defeat of the Kennett government, especially as this defeat was delivered by a bunch of women and kids from the northern suburbs, a bona fide community group who stood up against them and took them on, a David and Goliath type battle. And that sort of, you know, I hope that people really understand the extraordinary nature of our victory and the defeat suffered by the Kennett government on this, because it's only a week or so ago that Kennett was saying, just before Christmas, that's right, when we got the Equal Opportunity Board decision in our favour, Kennett claimed that the issue then with the Northlands battle had become a matter of who runs the state. Well, we've established that now, Geoffrey.
Yes, the people do it, and you didn't have more than $1 million to throw at them.
We had spectacularly less than $1 million. In fact, yesterday, last night when we had our party, I mean, one of the great scandals of this battle, as far as I'm concerned, is the fact that many powerful groups who should have supported us in this battle did not, and I'm talking specifically about Trades All in this state, who I thought it was a scandal last night that at our party, when we looked in our bank account, we had $4 at the end of a 2-year campaign, and our bank account was never more than about $1,500. Now, the government threw $1.5 million into the battle against us, and we beat them. But that shouldn't sort of exonerate the certain people in this town, in Trades All, who sat on their hands for the whole duration of this battle. Not only that, I can't neglect to mention our local federal member, Mr. Brian Howe, who, to the day that we won our battle, was still refusing to talk to us, his own constituents. You know, and I hope that the people of Batman remember that the next time we have a federal election out here. Not only that, I'd like also say that the Federal Minister for Schools, Ross Free, has not only consistently refused to talk to us for 2 years, but he's been quite happy to have little cups of tea and bickies with Jeff Kennett, Jeff Spring and Don Haywood, all talking about Northland's people. Now, I think that in many ways the behaviour of the federal government in this exercise, and certain members of the trade union movement in this exercise, have been disgusting, appalling, and probably worse than that of Jeff Kennett. So there.
Gary, I'm aware of the position of those politicians, which you've correctly represented. I don't know very much about the THC, but it does have to be said that one union deserves a special mention as a supporter, and in fact they've put a lot of work into the college. That's the Construction, Forestry, Mining and Energy Union.
I forget his name, was from the union, from that particular union, was out at our party last night.
Albert Little, yeah.
Yeah, Albert Little was there, and I was saying to him that there were, in the final analysis, and at the end of the day, there were only two unions who lifted a finger to support us. One was his, and the other was the FTUV and the AEU. Now, that was it. I actually, at one stage during this battle, went in and banged on John Halfpenny's desk and actually shouted at the poor little man. And we achieved a little bit of support from that. But why was it necessary to do that? And yet I went to a private anti-privatisation rally where Northland's people refused access to the stage to say anything. And yet I heard people up on that stage from Trades All claiming, you know, part credit for the great heroic victory or battle of the Northland's people, as it was at that stage. You know, I think there was an enormous amount of hypocrisy on the part of the leaders of Trades Hall in this town. I don't care what anyone says.
Right, Gary. As a sort of modification of mea culpa, we can say that the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union has aired the problem fairly consistently through its airtime here.
And not only that, I'd also must give credit also, I think, to the general audience at 3CR, because the only radio station who consistently supported us from day one and all the way through, and not just in my program and your program, but in across the range of programs, was 3CR. And it's another example of sort of the importance of that radio station, mate.
Thanks very much, and congratulations again to you and yours, to Rafaela, to everybody concerned. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
That audio was Gary Foley from back in 1995. He was heavily involved in the campaign to save Northland Secondary College and was a broadcaster at 3CR. Next up, I'm yarning with Lynn Thorpe, who was a courier educator at Northland Secondary College and Alistair's mum. These were recorded this year.
I think there's an important experience for all those young people to fight or be a part of something that they like I said, it goes back to human rights.
Mm.
And it's human rights in terms of what we've been fighting for pretty much since the
for
invasion.
Eternity. Yeah.
And, you know, every little bit that we get, it sort of gets taken back in so many different ways over the time, you know, of how difficult it is to get anything sustainable in terms of what we're entitled to. You know, this is Australia, our kids. And when you look at in science, astronomers and academics or Aboriginal science or using that Aboriginal ways of knowing and doing, being, seeing is a valuable resource or asset, but not, it seems to be, for everyone else and not for us as our own people to build on that. And so that we can have a place in the future. And then it gives us more choices as well, you know, what we want to do with our lives, not having to sacrifice our identity for that. Right. You know, when you look at little kids or kids when, you know, one thing that at Northland that used to, the kids love, having community members or whether it's your family members or people come in and tell a story or share some of their knowledge, you know, like yourself, who sang a song or, you know, had that yarn with the kids in the class, but it's about the relationship and relating your learning in a practical and purposeful way, a meaningful way.
Or just walked the corridors so that all the kids could... You know, look at your walk past their room and then they'd, Uncle Kutcher or Auntie Lynn or Auntie Deirdre.
Yeah.
And they knew. They knew that we were accessible to them.
Yeah.
And that's what was important not specifically Northlands, but any school.
Yeah.
That our kids could, you know, see their uncles and aunties at their school.
Well, feel like they belong there.
Yeah.
You know, they belong there and have some ownership in that place. And the parents, you know, to be able to be, make contributions. Not that they can't, but just trying to find a, you know, for, you know, whether it's embedding things into the curriculum, because you can embed Aboriginal knowledge in any curriculum area.
Will they meaning, you know, non-Indigenous education, will they ever get it?
Well, you know, there's some good people out there, but it's like the system is a beast. And I think there's so many, you know, if we look at how far down the track from the invasion, whether you call it an invasion or a nicer way to say it, but the fact is that the results and having the biggest impact on is Aboriginal people in a negative way. And it's all... but stripping people of their identity, you know, and it's done in a systematic way. And there's attempts to try and address that, but, and I'm not saying it's completely hopeless, but it's really hard when, you know, trying to get the right, there's a lot of work to be done.
That was Lynn Thorpe, former Koori educator at Northland Secondary College. The fight to save Northland Secondary College was successful, but the struggle for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander education continues.
You've been listening to Black Gold, a five-part series unearthing some of our finest audio from across four decades in the 3CR archives. The Black Gold series was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on Wurundjeri Land in Fitzroy, Melbourne, by myself, Kerry Lee Harding, and assistant producer, Corey Green. The series was financially supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Thanks so much for listening, and if you'd like to listen again or find out more about this unique series, head to 3cr.org.au/blackgold. I look forward to your company next time. See you later.